Hi, I'm Jeremy Schwartz, host of American Criminal. In our latest season, the child of Italian immigrants sets out to achieve the American dream. And if he has to spill some blood along the way, so be it. Listen to American Criminal, Al Capone, wherever you get your podcasts. Or to get ad-free access to the entire season first, subscribe at IntoHistory.com.
Welcome to the OC, bitches.
Welcome to the OC, bitches. Season one, episode 22.
The
LA.
LA. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited for this episode. There's so many things to unpack, and it's such a riddle wrapped in a puzzle and an enigma. But basically, the synopsis is Seth and Ryan discover Julie's affair with Luke, and Ryan lets him know it has to end. Summer and Marissa are invited to a Hollywood party after meeting actor Grady Bridges from Summer's favorite TV show, The Valley. She invites Seth and Ryan along. When they arrive at the club, they're shocked to find Haley working as a stripper. Meanwhile, Jimmy and Sandy have no choice but to ask Caleb to invest in the lighthouse. And when they have a dinner party sampling meat, the menu, their creative visions don't exactly align. It was directed by Dave Barrett, written by somebody named Josh Schwartz. And we have such a cool guest today. And this episode would not be here without him. So,
yes, today, everybody, I'm very excited and so grateful that he took us up on our invitation. The one and only Mr. Colin Hanks. He is a multi-talented actor, producer, director with a varied and storied career. He has been a part of some of the most memorable film and TV shows, including but not limited to Roswell, Band of Brothers, Mad Men, Dexter, Fargo, Jumanji, Drunk History, Life in Pieces, and even before Grady Bridges of the Valley on the OC, he was the star of the film Orange County. Yep, that's right, folks. He was there first. Please welcome the one and only Colin Hanks.
Hey, how
Hi.
Are you guys? Thank you so much for having me. This is a trip. I'm enjoying it.
Oh my God. Yeah,
we haven't even started and I'm already enjoying it.
Well, that's a good sign. Yeah, we're just so happy that you were willing to come on and talk to us. And rewatching this episode, you're so good in it and you have so much fun with this character. It's hilarious. Did you actually get to see it or have you ever seen it?
I did not get a chance to rewatch it, unfortunately. But I do remember seeing it when it aired. And I remember, like, actually, it's strange because normally, I don't know what you two are like, but normally it's kind of hard to sit there and watch yourself, and you sort of often say, like, really, that's the take they went for? I would have chosen a different one, or I would have done all of those things differently. But I remember watching it and just enjoying myself. I just thought it was really like such fun to be able to come and play and do something just really totally completely ridiculous. And also kind of, there was a sort of a fun component of sort of like lampooning, you know, essentially ourselves, and sort of playing with that. So, I just remember having an absolute blast, and I remember it sort of coming across that way, in the finished product.
Yeah, I remember working with you, and I just remember how awesome you were, and so cool, and so nice, and so talented. It was really fun for me because we watched it. Obviously, it's a rewatch podcast, so we rewatched it.
You have to.
But yeah, like you said, like we're making fun of ourselves. There's so many inside jokes, and
yeah.
I mean, but how you pull it off is just like, it's just so incredible. And just like that kind of like douchey, like TV actor, like totally just my manager, my real estate agent, it's just like so.
There's so much prime things that you can pull from that you've noticed when you're working in Hollywood. So you just sort of pull, you know, I pulled from a deep bag of things I've
observed over the years. Well, and just to start to go back a little bit, I mean, what was your path to becoming an actor? Just because it's in the family, you don't always necessarily get the bug. right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it was always something that I enjoyed doing. You know, I had done all the high school plays, and in college, I started sort of being a little bit more serious and doing theater in college. Mm-hmm. And ironically, Busy Phillips, who was on Freaks and Geeks and Dawson's mm-hmm. Creek, and has gone on to be in a million other great things. We went to college together, and we dated. And
really?
she really pushed me, and I sort of pushed her to really make the effort to try and, you know, be professional about it. And we both ended up getting jobs at the same time, and we both got our series at the same time. I got Roswell, she got Freaks and Geeks, and they shot across the street from each other. and so it was really kind of this, kind of, you know, the perfect timing, being in the right place in the right time with the right attitude. And it helped have, you know, a contemporary, someone that I really admired and trusted, sort of help, you know, pushing me out the door and getting me going. And then at that point, you know, I mean, this is a few years before the OC, but, you know, I mean, it was just, there was like the gold rush of, you know, TV shows and movies for young actors like myself. So I just ended up sort of like, you know, falling into that sort of stream and just kept going down river and just trying to get as many, many jobs and opportunities as I could. And then before I knew it, you know, I mean, it felt like it had been ages, but it had only been a few years. Mm-hmm. And then, the movie Orange County came around and, yeah. And then I was pretty much kind of at that point, I was pot committed to, you know, wearing makeup and pretending to be other people. For
I watched Orange County a couple nights ago with my husband who'd never seen it and just wanted to catch up on it because I hadn't seen it since 2002 when it came out. And I noticed that there's a lot of similarities in obviously the Sean character in Orange County and Seth. So obviously you were known for that film. It was very well known in the industry and it was successful and it had Jack Black and John Lithgow, an incredible cast. But I was curious, were you possibly up for the OC at all?
No, uh-huh. I wasn't. In fact, I had not heard about it until I started seeing commercials for it. And I remember actually the first commercial, I was like, oh, wow. Okay. that's interesting. And then ironically, it, you know, as sort of fate would have it, Josh Schwartz and I sort of ran in the same kind of circles. We had a couple of friends in common. And so I would run into him, around town. And I remember like one of the first times, sort of really genuinely like talking to him, I remember saying, hey, you guys got that Phantom Planet song, right? And he goes, yeah. And I go, let me guess. Someone said that you needed to have that song so that it could really drive home the fact that this is Orange County, California. And he goes, yeah, you know. And I'm like, yeah, I know that struggle. It's very important to differentiate between Orange County, Florida, and California.
Oh, yeah.
But I had never, yeah, at that point, I had never... I didn't know that they were making a show until it had already been picked up and they were putting a bunch of publicity money behind it.
Well, do you remember how it came about? How did, like, were you approached to be on the show or were they just like, there's this role, you have to be a super, like, you know, TV actor?
Yeah,
funny
I do remember, just at getting, being put on the phone with Josh at some point, you know, someone said, you know, Josh wants to talk with you. And I said, okay, great. And he basically just said, hey, look, I have this thing that I think you'd be perfect for. And I think it would actually be really, really funny on like a meta level if you did this. And he sort of gave me the pitch. And just based on that, I'm like, oh, yes, absolutely. Yes. And that was it. Like it was, I don't even think I read the script, but I don't think I read it before I said yes. I just think I said like, yeah, count me in. And then, you know, off we went.
Because casting you, yes, we're going to discuss this meta humor that is Josh's brand in, and this episode is the epitome of that. But casting mm-hmm. you was more like 2 to 3 or more jokes in one. Because, right, if we can yeah. discuss that, it's Adam Brody is playing Seth Cohen, and he was literally getting write-ups that were calling him the next Tom Hanks. And you're, yeah. and so Josh decides to have you playing
yep.
Adam Brody's character on a show and just emulating. That's why it's so meta that it like turns in on itself and almost implodes.
Yeah, but you know, I will say the cool thing that Josh did is he set that up, but he didn't take the bait for it. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? He mm-hmm. didn't say specifically, you know, do a version of Seth on right. like there wasn't anything about that. It was like he set the table pieces and but he said, but you know, this Grady guy, like he's a douche. He's you know, he's an annoying guy. So we're just going to stick with that and mm-hmm. just come up with that character, and everything else will sort of just be this wink and a nod to what, you know, what the show was doing, what the OC was doing.
Right.
And so he just kind of like let me kind of do whatever I wanted. So, you know, I was able to come up with all sorts of jokes, like, the hair was a big thing. I remember
your hair was long.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was long. Actually, this is a funny story. I don't know if I've said this anywhere, but the hair was actually making fun of my dad because he had this haircut for the first Da Vinci Code movie, and he was getting all sorts of like flack for it. So I just thought like, oh, well, that'd be a funny thing to do. So I just had him like flat iron my hair. Just, you know, just for me, just to amuse myself.
Right.
So, you know, they sort of flat iron my hair every morning.
That is a strong choice.
Yeah. I mean, it was, yeah, I don't quite know why I was doing it, but I was just, you know, again, I was just having fun and just sort of entertaining myself. And I think, you know, when you do that kind of stuff, it comes across, you know, in the finished yeah. product.
That is awesome.
So weird.
Yes, I really, really enjoyed that. But yeah, you're the TV version of the Seth that we reference a lot in this episode. So this episode was just so much fun. The whole LA of it all. And making fun of LA is always fun. Like, I, you know, I'm from here.
Oh, always.
Did you grow up here, Colin?
Not really. I primarily grew up in Northern California.
That's right.
I had family here. So I was down here every now and again. And so I'm very well versed at being able to make fun of Los Angeles.
But well,
it's a skill.
So yeah.
And the show, you know, obviously every episode has a "the" in front of it. And this one is, if we're the OC, this episode is the LA. And, mm-hmm. and it's similar to the Orange County, or sorry, to Orange County, your film,
yeah.
in that your character wants to get away to Stanford. And he finds mm-hmm. that ultimately it's not about, he wants to get out of Orange County. And yeah. I mean, all these stories are about, ultimately, at the end of this episode, we find, you know, the characters are like, let's get back to Newport. Let's get back to the real place. But they yeah. find that everyone's essentially the same. The world stays the same and people are still the same, whether they're in LA and the superficiality of that. There's superficiality in Newport as well. But ultimately, it's all about your family and connections. And it's not about trying to get out of a certain place. You know, LA is what you make of it. And I know that this... Once again, we're doing a show about Orange County, but we're going to LA because we actually shoot in LA and commenting on Hollywood and the ridiculousness yeah. of it and just the amount of attention that our show was getting in the press and the fans and in Hollywood itself. And there were so many jokes that hopefully, audience, we're going to be able to comment on each and every one in this episode. But there were a lot of similarities to your character in that movie.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think one of the things I remember kind of throwing in that wasn't in the script is when we're at the club and we do the cheers and I said, you know, to a second season. You know, that was because, I mean, I remember going through it on, you know, on my show. And I remember that, you know, you guys were, I mean, far, you know, in a whole nother tier in regards to attention and whatnot. But I mean, it was still your guys' first season. So mm-hmm. everything's still fresh and still new. And you sort of think it's going to go on forever, but you're also wanting to be aware that, you know, this is a special thing. And so I thought it was kind of funny if, you know, if I just threw it in that, like, they were obsessed about this show, they love this show, but it's only been on for one season. So, you know, here's a second season, you know, here's to a second season, you know, which who knows if they would, you know, who knows if the Valley would have gotten a second season. You know, I'm not 100% sure, but that idea of, you know, the thing that you're speaking to, the idea of the grass is always greener if you're not watering your own grass. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. it's always going to be greener someplace else, and you're always going to want to go someplace else.
Right.
And I think that's a very, very common.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
Feeling when, you know, when you're a kid, you know, when you're that age, you know, I remember feeling that way, you know, when I was younger about, you know, Northern California. And then as soon as I came down to Southern California, I wanted to get back up to Northern California, you know? Uh-huh. So these things, you know, these things are stories for reasons. And I think Josh and all the writers, I think they did a really good job of being able to capture that feeling, as well as, you know, the different characters and their different versions of that. And they did it to such a, you know, such a skilled degree that, you know, that's why you guys are hosting a podcast, however many years later, mm-hmm. you know, going through each episode and sort of talking about it. You know, it shows that you guys were onto something special.
So you ad-libbed. He actually ad-libbed in this one.
I did, yeah. But then again, I was just coming in for a day or two. So that's awesome. I guess I had that luxury.
Well, you come up with some good ones.
Do you remember any fan reaction to you? Did people recognize you from the OC?
Not really. Okay. You know, I'm sort of a very unassuming type guy, so a majority of people don't really clock me very much. And so I think for the people that watched the show, like for that, like week, yes. And then as soon as the next episode was on, like that was kind of it. But every now and again, you know, especially in this sort of day and age, since these things now, you know, sort of live forever in some various form somewhere or another, every now and again, someone will be like, oh, you want to know what I saw? I saw this episode of the OC and you were like playing an actor or something. I go, yep, that's right. I did that for a week.
Well, you do so many things. And, you know, Mindy, I didn't know if you knew about his handkerchiefs. Oh my gosh.
The what?
Well, you can say handkerchiefs.
Handkerchiefs?
Handkerchiefs. No. Or handkerchiefs.
They're very cool.
Yeah, I have a line of handkerchiefs. I have a line of kerchiefs, essentially. I make my own kerchiefs.
Oh, really?
They're super, super cool. Yeah.
And I got one right here.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, awesome.
I have literally have them laying around everywhere.
When did you start that? And what was it? How?
I started about 2 years ago. Yeah, you want to know what? I've just been one of those guys that is constantly looking for a new area of the sandbox to play in. I'm always just trying to keep myself kind of mentally occupied. And if it's at all creative, then I, you know, kind of prefer that. And I've always been really interested in graphic design and you know, patterns and fabrics and things like that. And you know, kerchiefs, bandanas, whatever, you know, you prefer to call them or know them as. I've just always had one on me. It's just always been sort of the utility item that I've always had.
To blow your nose or?
Accessory. Well, yeah, I mean, looks? Initially it was for the blowing of the nose. Yeah.
Naturally.
But I mean, that's what, you know, the grandpa used it for. That was probably the introduction for me. But as I started carrying them, you know, having them on me, they just became incredibly handy mm-hmm. in like a bunch of different scenarios. You know, you don't want to touch the doorknob. Ah. If, you know, you spill a drink, if you don't have a beer koozie handy, I mean, there's a million different ways. You don't want to get your neck burned. There's a million different uses for them. And so I just thought that that might be a fun, you know, experiment to try. And so I picked the brains of a few people, you know, in the sort of fashion garment, you know, industry. And they all said, that's actually a really good idea.
For our listeners, is it Hank's Kerchief online?
Yeah, just hankskerchiefs.com.
It sounds like kind of a, it's a mid-20th century tradition. And I think I've read that you like that mid-20th century time, that period time. Do you not?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I'm definitely a history buff, and, and I love finding out why certain things are certain ways. You know what I mean? And weirdly, you know, once I started genuinely thinking about, you know, kerchiefs and trying to start a company, I was very curious as to figure out, you know, well, what's the history behind it? You know, how does that fit into, you know, the fashion history, if you will? And so I did a deep dive and found out, you know, the creation of bandanas, which were initially much, much bigger pieces of cloth that were used to wrap around your head in places like Asia that would, you know, protect you from the sun. And then as Western civilization and Western fashion became more and more popular, it sort of shrunk down. And, you know, look, at some point there was a time when Kleenex did not exist and diapers did not exist. And the idea of anything disposable did not exist. You know, they were all pieces of cloth that you had to wash. And so the idea of, you know, a big bandana sort of shrinking down into a little kerchief size that you can put in your pocket, you can put in your purse, whatever. You could put up your sleeve, which a lot of guys did back in the day. You know, all of those kinds of things. That's where, you know, that's how you wave goodbye to the ships as they go out of the harbor because they don't have planes yet, you know. Right. So all of these little historical kind of like tidbits and stuff, I'm fascinated by. And the idea of something that's sort of classic and old school, like, you know, kerchief and, you know, some jeans and a pair of Ray-Bans, I'm happy. I don't need much else.
Yeah, I feel you. I mean, I'm an avid fan of old people.
Yeah.
And like grandparents and Golden Girls, clearly, which is also referenced in this episode when you're like, we're going to make them totally, we have the rights for Golden Girls. We're just going to make them a lot younger and hot.
That's right.
Is a line in this. So Golden Girls is like, an ongoing theme. Yes, that line is
Summer,
awesome.
Summer's like, what? You're not going to mess with my Golden Girls, really?
And I had the same reaction. I was like, don't you touch my Sophia. So anyway, it's like your whole, like your love of that time and handkerchiefs and everything kind of really just ties it all up in a little bow with the Golden Girls.
That may have been her first clue that Grady Bridges may not be the guy she thinks he is, right?
Yeah, probably not.
Doesn't get it.
But you have a couple projects coming up that I looked up and I was curious if you could tell us about them. The Offer in Clear Lake?
Yeah, so The Offer is a Paramount series that I'm shooting right now. It's going to be on Paramount Plus, the new streaming service, and it is a limited series that is about the making of The Godfather, which is pretty cool. I mean, on the surface, it's kind of like, all right, how many stories are there about the making of The Godfather? But it's actually a really interesting sort of examination of the thousands of miracles the thousands of miracles that are required to make a movie. And literally, I think for, you know, the people that aren't necessarily in the business, it is literally thousands of miracles that all need to happen, you know, in relatively the same amount of time to get anything made these days. And it just so happens that, you know, the thousands of miracles, you know, required to make that particular movie ended up being one of the most iconic, most important films of all time. And so there's a lot of really interesting tidbits about how that was made. And it's a really interesting sort of look into the way the film industry was at that time. So that's pretty cool. The Clear Lake thing, we're still waiting to find out what, you know, what the deal with that is. But it's about Buddy Holly and about, you know, how Buddy Holly came up in the music industry at that time. And what made him so incredibly unique and sort of special, you know, in that era of music, which I found to be really sort of fascinating because, you know, Buddy Holly, I think there's a lot of people now that do just sort of think of the songs and they sort of think, oh, well, yeah, that's Buddy Holly. But he's actually kind of revolutionary for his time. So that's pretty cool. And then I do have a part in this this show, Impeachment, the American Crime Story.
Oh, you do?
It's coming out in a few days. Yeah, yeah. I play a guy.
Monica Lewinsky? Mike.
Yeah, the Monica Lewinsky season. Yeah, yeah. I play Monica Lewinsky. And I play Mike Emick, who was the guy, one of the guys who worked for Kenneth Starr in the office of the Independent Counsel, and he was kind of in charge of kind of holding Monica Lewinsky against her will for about, 15 hours, trying to get her to work with them. And so he's kind of, a bad guy. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It should be pretty interesting.
All of the American crime stories have been just superb. But then you mentioned music, and I know you are self-proclaimed music nerd. You even did a documentary about Tower Records. And do you remember, music is a big part of the OC. Do you remember, did you approve of our music, or were you into the indie bands?
Yeah, you want to know what? I mean, it's funny that you mentioned it. I mean, obviously, one of the first things I talked with Schwartz about was about music, and I don't think that's a happy accident. A lot of the times that I've hung out with Josh since has been at concerts, seeing shows. We're both, pretty big music fans. And that was actually one of the things I really admired about the OC was the fact that there was so much attention paid to the music cues. You know, a lot of times, especially at that time with sort of teenage shows, if you will, they would just kind of like throw in whatever was popular at that time or sort of throw in whatever kind of worked. And it was really sort of an afterthought of stuff. I mean, I remember there was an episode of Roswell where my character was supposed to be playing in a band, and like they gave us like 5 80s songs that they could clear, and 3 of them were already like themes for other WB shows. And we're like, well, you can't, like, let's try something different, maybe? I don't know. And so I always really liked the fact that the music cues and the stuff that I assume was literally like written to, I mean, I'm assuming that a lot of that music was very specifically in mind when those scenes were written. I just thought it was such a great way of not only really making the show different and adding, its own special component to it, but I thought it was also a great way to break, a bunch of bands at that time. So that was still a time where you can really sort of do that. Give a band a big break on TV. So I always really sort of admired that. And so I would always listen. I don't think I bought any of the CDs. There were some soundtracks, right?
Yeah.
I didn't buy any of those, but I knew the bands. I knew of them, I should say.
Of them. Yeah. And then, like you said, mentioned before, we shared the Phantom Planet song in both Orange counties.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. No, it's, I think it's another component. Truly, I actually do think it's another component of Orange County. It does have its own specific sort of music scene. And that was the one thing I always thought was kind of funny, was that a lot of times the music didn't necessarily match the music scene that's in Orange County. It tends to be more like sort of punk oriented or ska oriented or something like that. But I still dug the video.
There was talk of keeping it more to bands that were in Orange County, I think like No Doubt and Sublime, but then he wanted it to be more universal. And it's interesting that
Snoop Dogg, just kidding.
Technically, Orange County. Yeah. The LBC is located
LBC
in Orange
is
County.
Yeah, considered.
That is true. Yeah.
But no, I mean, that's actually a smart thing to expand that sort of musical palette. Cause again, it gives you a chance to be able to use music as storytelling. Cause that's the joke, right? Mm-hmm. The scene is great, but it's all going to be music telling you how to feel. So
it is.
Let's just put a lot of music telling you how to feel. And, I think Josh and the music supervisors, the advisors had a keen ear and a keen eye for that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Alex Patsavis, our music supervisor.
Yeah, Alex Patsavis was she's obviously gone on to do many wonderful things. Mm-hmm. Colin, if you have time for us, we do have a couple of voicemails for you, if you're willing to answer them and stay.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, sure.
You should be nervous.
I'm very nervous. I don't like voicemails. This is going to be okay. Let's see.
Recorded voices.
Hi, my name is Vanessa from Illinois. I actually met Colin Hanks when I was a kid. His dad was filming A League of Their Own in Berwyn, Illinois, and we met him when he was on set. My question was for him. I wondered if that was one of his first autographs he ever signed was for me when he was a teenager, and also if he knew back then that he wanted to act. That's it. Have a great day. Thanks.
Oh, my goodness.
That's awesome.
Yeah, sure. I mean, if I signed something, yeah, probably was. Yeah, definitely. Did I know I wanted to act? I don't know. I mean, that's hard to really say. I really enjoyed being on set. It was definitely something that looked like a whole lot of fun, and I knew that that would be fun to be able to do eventually. But, you know, I also wanted to be a hockey player and, you know, do all sorts of other stuff, even though I wasn't equipped to do any other stuff, really, or any of those things. So it was kind of something that I had my eye on, but I wasn't really 100% sure.
On Valentine's Day 1929, a group of gangsters was massacred in a cold Chicago garage. The crime shook the country, and even though investigators had only just started looking for answers, everyone was sure they already knew who was behind the crime. Al Capone. Hi, I'm Jeremy Schwartz, host of the new true crime history podcast, American Criminal. We take you inside the minds of some of our most notorious felons and outlaws, exploring the dark side to the American dream. In our latest season, a child of Italian immigrants sets out to make good on the promises of that dream. But Al Capone's path to success doesn't take him down the straight and narrow. Instead, he transforms himself from a smarter-than-your-average thug into the most infamous criminal America has ever known. Listen to American Criminal Al Capone wherever you get your podcasts. Or to get early ad-free access to the entire season first, plus hundreds of other ad-free history podcast episodes, subscribe at IntoHistory.com.
That was definitely what I was going to do. Thank you for the question. All right, next one. Can we do it like Larry King, where you go like, Illinois, you're next.
Hey, Melinda. Hey, Rachel. This is Jamie from Vancouver, Canada. Thank you so much for doing this podcast. It's amazing to go back and watch these episodes and listen to this podcast with you. My question for Colin is, did he have any crushes or flirt with any of the girls while filming The OC way back when?
Oh, getting some tea.
Really putting you on the spot here.
Putting me on the spot.
Well, Colin and I met in the parking lot for a quick minute, and that's it.
A quick minute. We had a quick little rendezvous in the parking lot. It was very quick. A quick how do you do? Jeez.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I liked, I thought Amanda Rigetti was pretty.
I mean, she was stripping in the background, so it's hard to not.
That's
from
right.
There.
She was. That's right. She was.
She was.
She was.
Yes.
Yeah. So I was stoked that, I was stoked at that, but you know, that was it. I didn't.
No, he's a married man.
I was respectful then, and I will be respectful now.
Yes, very respectful, distinguished gentleman you are.
Yeah.
Our lips are sealed.
Thank you, Vancouver, Canada.
Well, Colin, I read a quote that you love to go to work and laugh. And that's what this show was for us. Go to work and have fun. And I appreciate everything that you've put on the screen because I loved Fargo. And I just wanted to mention, you did a lot of drunk histories. Is that, and you did one too. Rachel, is that
difficult
show to do?
It's so fun.
Is it?
It's the best. I'm so sad that it's gone.
I know.
It was the most fun.
Really?
Yeah, and the best way to learn, by the way, that is my preference. Like, if I'm going to learn any historical facts, that's the way I want to do it. Like, watching that show was just it was so much fun. And Derek is obviously the creator. He's just
so you guys
so funny and
as,
so cool.
As guests, you have to memorize or listen to the person who's drunk giving the history, right? Is that how it works?
Yeah, pretty much. And you have to learn. I don't know. Rachel, I'm willing to bet maybe your experience was the same, but you would kind of get an email maybe like 2 days before, like, hey, are you available to do a drunk history?
Yeah.
And you'd sort of say like, yeah, actually, I can do that on Tuesday. Sure. And they send you all the stuff and, you know, you read the script and they send you like basically the files of all the sort of audio segments because it, you know, it's called a radio cut. They send you the radio cut. And then it was actually one of the coolest things that I loved about that show was that they put you in the trailer. And it's really incredible what they would do because they were doing a different era every day. And so the costumes were always sort of pretty incredible and the makeup mm-hmm. and the wigs and all that sort of stuff. But they'd put you in your trailer and you put on your outfit and all that stuff on the day. It was all literally that morning. But then there would be an iPad that would have all of the stories that they were going to tell that season. And you could actually go, and I would like go and listen to some of the other stories and hear the other drunk people telling the stories about, you know, anything else. And then inevitably I'd go like, oh shit, I gotta start listening to what I'm supposed to know. Right. And so I would just listen to it nonstop and they'd have big speakers and I'd just say, play it a million times and a million times.
I think the last one I did was it like the real story of A League of Their Own, maybe? It might have been. Oh, really?
Did you do one about the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League?
I believe I did. Mm-hmm. Vanessa Hudgens and I did together, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, that's great. Oh,
I think
that's
it was.
Cool. Oh, hey.
I'm pretty, but yeah, look at another full circle. I mean, look. Just crazy. Keep coming up with them today.
If you're in show business long enough, these things will pop up in your life.
They really will.
Yeah,
it was such a pleasure. Thank you so much for taking the time to.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, really appreciate. And also, I just want to say, I stalked you on Instagram when I DM'd you, and you didn't respond. And then Josh was like, "Oh damn, like he dissed you. He's not responding." And I was like, "Wait," because you can see that they've seen the message. So Colin had seen my message but didn't respond, and I was like, "Oh man," so I was harassing you.
No, not at all. That is a prime example of me forgetting which method of communication is being used. Was it a text? Was it an email? Where, what's going on? I think it was actually Josh, eventually just emailed and said, hey, I think Belson's trying to get in touch with you about her podcast. I think
that tracks.
Oh, yeah. Shit. That's right. Oh, yeah. Oh,
hello?
I'm the asshole that, looked at the message and then just never got back. So,
you know what? You have kids. We get it.
You guys know what I'm talking about.
Yep, sure do. So good to see you and catch up with you.
It's really good to see you too. I hope to see you.
And congratulations. I just love him. I remember him, honestly, just loving him then. He was so cool. And he still obviously is. And just really cool of him to come on the show and talk to us about everything.
I know. And it's he was such a perfect choice for this role in this episode because I think I've never met his dad, but his dad is clearly one of the gems and cool, nice human beings on the planet. And it rubbed off on Colin. And I just think this is such an interesting episode because it's more, Josh has made a humor, which he peppered throughout the entire series, but this is the mega, this is like the episode where this happens.
Oh, yeah.
And since Colin had a limited time with us, we are going to go through the episode and we're going to talk about, I'd like to comment on quite a few of the jokes, if we can do that. If you want to get into that. Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah. I mean, it's such a fun episode. The LA episode where we go to the Valley. I mean, all of it obviously hits close to home. And anyway, I'm just very excited to go through it with you today.
Yeah.
With all of you listening today.
Right. So, let's get into it.
Yeah, the opening scene, right, is like...
Okay, can I just say that this is... because this was the meta in, you know, the joke within the joke and we're in on it, guys. You know, ultimately, Josh was looking at the message boards and he was looking at complaints and compare and he's commenting on everything that he possibly can. And of course, there's a classic Seth opener where he's literally talking about his, you know, watch. Did you take the watch on or did you take the watch off before foreplay or after? Because I like to leave it on, Ryan. You know, I leave it on so I can know how I'm doing, if I'm beating my old time. Oh my gosh, it's just terrible.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. It never ends.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they show up at the Mermaid Inn to get Ryan's watch that he left because he was smashing Teresa there.
smashing.
Left yes. while smashing. Whilst.
Yeah.
And there's a lot going on. This is a strong opener, you know? Mm-hmm. Ryan has to like stay away from the drama. He's going to try to like take
it easy. He's got a clean slate. And for mm-hmm. And he's like, wow, I really don't have any drama going on. And this is going to be a month long situation. And Seth proclaims this. And of course, dun, dun, dun. Okay. So I remember you see Luke and Julie. You see Luke first. Julie comes out, big wet kiss and a slap on the ass.
Oh, yeah.
And
I bet the slap on the ass was improvised. That looked very Mindy to me.
probably was. But I do remember, it was interesting. These feelings pop up for me during these episodes. I mean, I don't know if you feel the same, but I can remember at this point, waking up and just being so excited to go to work. And then I also remember doing this. This was a pickup. We didn't actually do it at the Mermaid Inn because there is an actual inn in Long Beach, but it was a pickup on set. And I remember Chris and I, we were becoming friends and we were just giggling about the storyline and okay, we're gonna, you know, we were making fun of it just like anybody else would. But I remember just when I was watching it this last week, I said to my husband, you know, when I was doing this storyline, I kept thinking to myself, what's the big deal? She's not, you know, he's not dating her daughter anymore. And now watching it, of course it's a huge deal. I don't know if I was just like Team Julie back then and just like being a method actor, like, what's the big deal?
Right, right. You're like, whatever. He's 18, which I have clearly stated in voiceover.
He was 24 in real life, I think. 24, 25.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I mean, nowadays, you know. That's nothing. Yes, but so it's revealed to Ryan and Seth in the opening scene. So we know what's going to follow, don't we?
Yes. Yeah, they're kind of shell-shocked from the whole thing, I think.
yeah, for sure. But it does play into like, it's very relevant today because it's all about like women, like, you know, owning it, dating younger men, and it's not a big deal. Like clearly this is like high school boy. It's a little different, but in retrospect, Chris, 24, you were young, early 30s,
yeah,
right?
Right, right.
I mean, that's, mm-hmm. Everyone would like praise you today. Like, yeah, get it.
But then I thought, I had to think about it. I was like, my daughter's ex-boyfriend? Holy shit, no. So
no, that part of it is definitely a big no-no. Right. That is a huge no-no.
Right, right.
But, you know, women getting there is nothing wrong with that. In retrospect.
So the other storyline that is going on is the that Jimmy and Sandy are out of money for the lighthouse. And I mm-hmm. love this line of dialogue from Sandy. Wow, you're really not good at managing the money, are you, Coop? No, Jimmy sucks. He clearly sucks with money, right?
yeah, exactly. So. We're like, oh no, this is very, very clear
right, right,
from
right.
the beginning of the series. But yes, really smart idea to go into business with him. But yeah, that's definitely a fun storyline we'll talk about today as well. And the other thing going on is we are introduced to a show, or maybe they were introduced to the show the episode before.
You watching right? The Valley has happened in the background. Yes.
Yes.
In another right. episode.
So The Valley has been introduced before, but it becomes very relevant in this episode. Mm-hmm. Summer and Marissa are walking on the beach. So the funny thing really quick, so we're on the beach, right? And I don't know mm-hmm. if you noticed, like I have sunglasses on. Mm-hmm. They were my own personal, very, you know, of the time sunglasses. I had gone on vacation with my family. And I remember the sun and the wind, like for some reason, my eyes, like they water like crazy. I cannot do it. Mm-hmm. And I had to fight tooth and nail because Cindy, our makeup artist, could not keep up with like touching my eyes up because I was just crying. I was like, you guys, like sunglasses are usually a big no-no. Like
right.
they never want you to wear sunglasses. They always want to see your eyes, see what you're communicating and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, dude, I need to wear sunglasses. and, you know, Jamie Barber, our DP, you know, if the sunglasses don't have special lenses that don't see the reflection of the cameras, right. It was a whole ordeal. Anyway, I won because I looked like I was sobbing, like ugly crying profusely. So I had to wear my sunglasses in this scene. Little note for you. But when Marissa and Summer are on the beach, they see that something's going on. Mm-hmm. They're filming something. Sure enough, it's the Valley. Not only is it the Valley, but it is the star of the Valley, Grady Bridges, played by Colin Hanks, who we just spoke with. And mm-hmm. I mean, meeting him, just he just comes on the screen just so like impactful. And you're just like, oh my God, I know exactly this guy, like this actor. And he did such a great job. And it's a really fun scene. And okay. Summer freaks out.
Well, and you're... So yes, this is the introduction of what this whole episode is going to be about, because at this point, the OC was so, it was such a hit. And there was, like we said before with Colin, there was a lot of publicity going on, and there was a lot of write-ups, and there was a lot of just so much attention, and your relationship with Adam Brody, and all of this. Josh was having a field day with this script.
Oh, yeah.
And so here are the few jokes that we want to make sure that we get in this. Needleman was going to be originally the Coen's name. So he now was able to put it into this because apparently that name was a little too Jewish, and then of course the Valley is the show within the show. And when you actually do your, oh my God, he's so cute. And Marissa goes, he is. Well, yeah, not in your traditional kind of way, but he's hilarious. He's funny. I hear he improvises all his scenes. And that was exactly what people were saying about Adam Brody, right?
Right, right. It's clear that this is the TV version of Seth and Adam, and the comparison, and Josh having fun with that.
Right.
And I actually loved like Misha in this scene because she doesn't know the Valley. She doesn't know who he is. Mm-hmm. And Summer's like hitting her like, what are you doing? You know, and it's like typical...
Right.
Best friends in high school. Like, oh my God, you're so embarrassing.
I think we're going to have to talk about the hitting. Summer hits a lot, I've noticed. But that was, in that scene, that is Jamie Barber, our DP, acting as the DP. And, you know, but Grady.
Oh my gosh, I didn't notice that. Is he in it?
Yeah, yeah. He's walking up. He's doing the lighting. And Grady is so fucking arrogant. Like, and this, and also you guys, he's portraying what that stereotype I think of actors is because you just met him. We're like this. If people come up to me and talk to me about my job, I love if they're genuinely like it, I have no problem having a conversation, but he is so arrogant. Like, well guys, we're on location, which means we're shooting a scene. And my character starts dating a girl from Newport. And I'm like, oh, is Newport like Chino from, you know what I mean? Or LA people like, oh, Newport's like Chino.
Right, right. Yeah.
Totally taking the piss out of it. Yeah, so.
Yes, absolutely. And then he like invites us to LA. I'm just like,
yeah.
Wow, I guess we really, I don't know. We must have really left an impression. Him to go the extra mile.
Right, right. And then when you go, when you're at school and you invite the boys and.
Yes, yes.
Brody's just like, awesome. Just the way you say it. He did it. He was like, we get to go to LA.
Awesome.
Awesome. Jealousy, Coen. No need for jealousy. I could never date an actor. There's the other joke.
Oh man, my track record. Good Lord. Lord help me. Oh my God. Yes. So they have this plan now to go to LA because they were invited and they tell the boys and like they're going to go or whatever. And is this where Ryan comes up with the idea to make Luke break it off with you because they're going to go to LA?
They've already made that. After that, they make that decision that they have to do this and he's going to break it off. And so, but I do love that line, that scene where he walks up and he just literally says, so did you have sex with Julie Cooper today? Boom.
I know. Yeah, I know. It's so good. And by the way, like Luke doesn't even try to pretend like he doesn't know what he's talking about.
For a split second he does. And then he's like.
Like barely. Oh, yeah, no. Yeah. And then he just caves like super easily.
Right.
But yeah, so, you know, so they're all going to go to LA. That plan is in the works. They have to talk to Sandy and Kirsten to get permission to go to LA, Seth and Ryan.
right? Which is pretty hysterical. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. They say no at first. Sandy and Kirsten are like, no way.
No. Yeah, no way. But then, of course, the way when Seth presents it, because he's just broken all that trust, they're like, mm-hmm. hell no. And then Ryan, he goes like, tag in here, bro. You know, because we're business yeah. partners. And Ryan's like, this is how it's going to be. We're going to be home by midnight. And then eventually they say, okay. But this was an interesting tidbit. You know, when Sandy says, don't spend one more minute in LA, that town will steal your soul. Once mm-hmm. again, this is Josh writing. And I do believe that the original script had way more jokies and a lot of inside jokes. And mm-hmm. between Josh and the network, they decided it was too much. And they're actually at one point, and I think it may have been here, I could be wrong, but there was a speech that Sandy had about the Golden Globes, which was very too inside. You know, if you remember in the early 2000s, it's totally different. We talked with McGee about this, and just with social media and shows like Entourage and stuff, it's just people are more aware of the inside workings of Hollywood and the Golden Globes. You know, there's a lot more awareness to what that show is. And back then it was kind of like, what? But it was kind of an inside joke of how silly anyway, people have been saying yes. things about the Golden Globes for a long time.
But you know
what I thought was really funny, Rachel? So just a few scenes before, when Seth actually is watching the valley and he's and Ryan comes up and he's like, he's kind of like you, Seth. And Seth says, you know what, handsome and charming. He's like, no, geeky and sarcastic. He improvises all his lines. He's totally him and he's totally me. Oh my God. And he flips out. There was a lot of that, like, attention getting, you know, all of this stuff is exactly what Adam was experiencing on the show.
Right. Yeah, that's true. The parallels.
Yeah.
Which is funny. So the foursome, we wind up going to LA, right? And so you see the scene where we're sitting in traffic on the way to LA. And I was like, this is Mindy's favorite scene of all time.
Or just like triggering and PTSD. Oh, triggering. Yeah. Because you know what? It's so funny. I heard that there's John Wayne Airport in Orange County. And I heard that John Wayne, because he lived in Newport, he had a helicopter that would go fly him from Newport. I used to fantasize about it, about having a helicopter, because when I'd be stuck in traffic. So it's pretty
bad.
Those
are your fantasy dreams.
It's the worst in the...
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
And the Chitty Chitty Bang Bang reference. It's a pretty cool
scene. Oh yeah, I love the Chitty Chitty Bang. I mean, I loved that movie as a kid. So I thought that was really funny.
Right.
We just had a flying car. Right. And Marissa, you know, in Summer, Marissa's saying that, you know, you're not, Julie's not around that often. And Summer is immediately mm-hmm. like, oh, she's having an affair.
Right.
And like Ryan, they're like, what? No. Like the boys are, you know, put to attention. Right. And like, that's not happening.
Summer's just very aware. I think she's had a little bit more life experience and Marissa's just, she really is a lot more vulnerable and naive than Summer. Yes.
Very. And I think it's funny, like Summer starts to say something and she gets cut off. I don't know if it's about like a blow job or boob or some word gets cut off. She's saying something.
Right.
And Seth's like, oh, what a flying car.
Yeah, right. So let's dig into this whole Hollywood party at Luna Chicks, which was
Luna Chicks.
A club called Deep on Hollywood and Vine.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, and these clubs come and go. The buildings remain, the clubs come and go. There's probably something else there now.
And, yeah, just a different name.
Yeah. And the first joke that comes in is, you know, Ryan says, you know, when they get there, and first thing Ryan says is, how does that guy play high school? Which is what people were saying about you guys. Except for Misha. So.
Right. Yes. Very funny. But there's so much going on. You come into this club and there's strippers, and I think, is it Summer or Marissa's line here next? I thought it was a cliche, young Hollywood doing coke with strippers. I didn't even think they had bread anymore. Is that both of them saying it?
Yeah, Marissa says it and then Summer says
it. And Summer does the bread.
Yeah.
Right. It's just so, like, the shit talking on LA throughout this whole episode is very comical. Mm-hmm. And then they meet Team Grady next, right? Because they see Grady. And this made me laugh because it's all young dudes.
Well, and interestingly enough, I mean, this is the awareness and the commenting on everything. And our show comments on Newport, and then this show is going to comment on LA. And this is right about the time when Entourage was starting with Entourage.
Oh, really?
So this was kind of pre-Entourage. I mean, this is exactly what I guess, I mean, I don't know about you, but I never had that. This is my agent, manager, lawyer. I mean, if we did have, no. I remember we would have parties, right? And all of your reps would show up. And I don't think, and you do call it a team, right? I've never had that. Yeah. I've never dragged my.
No, I haven't either. But yeah, no, it was his team. He's like, you got my agent, my manager, my lawyer, my this, my publicist, blah, blah, blah. And it's really funny. There are all these like this young dudes that don't say anything. They're just like, what up?
So who's our big cameo of this episode?
We have a huge cameo this episode with Paris Hilton herself. Which, by the way, this whole thing is so hilarious. And I had forgotten about it. I knew she was on the show, but I had forgotten, you know,
the details
about this whole cameo. Yeah, the details. And watching it back was hilarious. I mean, they first bump into her and it's like, I think one of the best lines of the episode when she's just like, all you LA chicks are so lame. I'm like, we're not from LA. We're from Orange County. Orange County? Ew.
Right.
She does that.
Yes, exactly.
It's like the best callback, obviously, to the Chino ew. And Paris, you know, delivered it. Yeah. She was awesome.
I
really thought she did an incredible job. And it was really funny. There were so many nods in this episode.
It's
surprising
so
that we got her. And at that time, she was so obviously still
and,
is, but like.
And then Josh gives her, you know, the fact that she's smart. And he does that, you know, that like, don't judge books by their covers. So he does the same thing with Summer. And
yeah, which is the same. I was going to say it's the parallel with Summer because.
Right.
We find out she's like, you know, in grad school and speaking about all these like very intellectual things with Seth.
Right. So then I do want to say we did see that obviously Ryan and Marissa discovered that Haley is there. But then really quick, you guys, I think I told you when my daughter was on that the next scene where Julie ushers Luke out of the house and she rushes over to the Cohen house, that is the scene that CG called action and cut. That was just to let you know which one that was.
How appropriate.
Right. But then really quick, going to the Cohen house and Caleb is addressing the dinner party and pitching the lighthouse. This is the scene where Tate passed gas that we talked about with Matt Ramsey and Tate himself. So, you can imagine.
Oh, that's so good. That's so good. And he's okay with us calling him out because.
Oh, yeah. It's never, I mean, I don't know. It happened once before on a show that I did where the actor, it was loud. And I don't know how we got through it. It was an action sequence too. I was an operative and I was stabbing him in the neck with some kind of poison.
Oh,
and all of a sudden, you know.
getting stabbed in the neck will do that to you.
Right.
Oh, my God. That is so good. Yeah. Okay, so we're still at the club.
Okay.
And Summer is with Grady at his table, right? And he tells her that he has a new episode that she can watch if she wants. And this is where Summer clocks that Seth is talking to Paris and, you know, that whole conversation they're having. And
you
she's
know,
like, yeah.
Well, it's interesting. Okay, so Summer is truly interested in her, you know, her favorite actor and this show and coming.
Oh, yeah.
But. And Seth is very concerned about her and, you know, and you know, this is my girlfriend. And do you think Summer's being a little insensitive? We don't know. The audience doesn't know if she's actually interested in him and what she would do. Most girls in that situation would kind of go wide-eyed and do whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe be led down the wrong path. But it's kind of insensitive to Seth, don't you think?
Yeah, I do think so. I think this is a time where it's not Marissa being unaware. It's a little Summer's just like unaware of that because she doesn't care because this is like her favorite show of all time, her favorite actor, but she's not thinking about it like that.
Right.
You know, and because like he tells her there's a show to come watch. They're watching it in the car in the next episode or episode, sorry, the scene coming up. And I'm like watching this and Summer is so into the show and he's trying to talk to her. She's like, no, I'm trying to watch. Like the balls on her. Like I was just so impressed with her being able to be like, dude, this is my show. I am watching it right now.
Right.
Don't talk to me. And he's like a famous actor that she's obsessed with. And I was like, good for Summer.
Right. But then he says, why would you want to watch this? I'm not in this scene.
Right. Which I know. I guarantee. Which was also great.
So when we did some of those viewing parties, I remember for some reason it was a small, it was after we were doing the McG viewing parties and we were at Adam and Brett's place. And it was like you, me, and I brought CG with me. It was just like the six of us or something. And I remember CG, of course, she's a little young, and Josh being like, shh, we're watching. You know, why? Well, you're not supposed to bring a little girl to this. We're watching.
Oh my gosh. So I was Josh.
Sometimes it's like when you're watching your show, it's like we really would get into it and be careful to not talk. Please stop talking. We're watching.
Yeah. Yeah.
So everything in this episode, you guys, is probably something, is Josh's voice is something that probably has happened. And I mean,
oh, yeah.
we weren't allowed to watch dailies on this show, but I've watched dailies in other shows. But
so dailies are basically when you shoot the scene and there's takes of the scene that you do over and over. That's what the dailies are, just watching them before they're put together.
And they can be pretty boring. Yeah.
Yeah, they can be pretty boring. But yeah, she's so into it. And all the inside jokes here, Summer is so into the show, like almost crying. And she's like, it's just so good. I wish I was from the Valley, which obviously is an inside joke because I am in fact from the Valley.
You are from
Josh
the Valley.
Josh was having fun there as well.
Yeah, you're almost crying. So I wish I was from the Valley.
I know.
Yeah. No.
Oh, man. So, you know, back in the club, Seth now realizes that Haley is stripping. And they're trying to get her out of there. The owner's pushing her on stage. The owner, I guess he kicks him out.
He kicks Seth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They got kicked out. They're outside of the club now. They can't figure out, they can't find Summer and they can't leave without Haley. And they're like, how do we sneak back in? This was one of my favorite things. I laughed out loud because Brody like tries to scale the wall like Spider-Man or whatever. And he's like, yeah, no, this is too dewy. I'm going to go around. Right. The wall dewy.
Right. Well, and that to me sounded like an improv for sure. But
oh, for sure. And I laughed out loud. It was really funny.
This was pre Camp Gallagher. I was all camp capture the flag, Tuckahoe. I'm very stealth, and which probably was in the script, but the dewy part was probably not.
That's kind of dewy. I mean, really, I really laughed out loud. But yeah, so Marissa has the idea that they can sneak back in,
which is pretty funny, right? Right.
Very funny. And then Marissa does her whole thing where she pretends that Ryan is on the Valley, and
or just a show. Like, oh my,
she's
God.
Very. Committed.
Oh no, she said the Valley. That's it. You're right.
Yeah. Yeah, she's in the Valley.
Yeah, yeah.
She's a very committed fan.
And when she says, you are actually a little shorter than I imagined, Ben got that a lot. Yeah.
Yep. Another inside little, you know, zing.
Right,
zinger.
Right. And the bouncer says, take advantage, kid. You're only a teen idol once. Do you think that was Josh's message to you guys?
Interesting. No. Maybe. Right. I don't know. That's pretty funny.
But I think one of the things that's ultimately that I've learned is just to not take myself so seriously. Nothing is really that serious. And
right.
And, you know, we all really did have a good time together. That doesn't mean that we didn't have long hours and long days. And there were some days we were just exhausted, but it was really fun.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So obviously they get back in the club and Seth winds up finding Summer just as Grady's like making the moves on her.
Oh,
he opens
right.
the door. What really well timed out. what's really funny is what Seth says. You know, I heard some really awful music and I knew it could only be self-indulgent actors with instruments. What are you doing? And the irony is that, you know, Adam was in a band and
well, and Colin was in a couple, his quote, bad bands too. So there's another joke in there, right? So yeah,
yes,
the band,
lots of jokes.
The song is All the Boys by the Plus Ones. So I was like, oh. You know, that's another question. I'm like, huh, why is this music? Is it music that actually Adam didn't like or Josh didn't like?
Right. I also thought like it was kind of crazy that Summer didn't get in more trouble with Seth.
Right. Like being in the back of a car. Yeah. I think maybe he really does see that you just like the show because I don't know. I mean, maybe. But maybe when we've got some things coming up, like when they go to Vegas and Seth didn't get in as much trouble. You know what I mean? You guys aren't that couple that.
Yeah.
It's not.
Sure. We're mature.
Right. I guess.
We'll say. But also, you know, what also was funny to hear is Grady's girlfriend, April, from the show The Valley, opens the door. And we learn that they're actually dating in real life.
Right.
Which, of course.
Summer freaks out.
Are you sure this is a good idea? What if you guys break up? Like, yes, Adam and I were dating at the time. Clearly some underlying meaning behind these jokes.
Josh just really making fun of you guys. Do you remember saying these jokes and not wanting to do them or just having the fun?
I always would laugh. I didn't care. Just like you said, don't take yourself seriously. I was like, oh, here we go.
Right.
Yeah. Always just had fun with it. And it was just, I did not take it seriously. And he was right, you know?
Yeah. I also wanted to say that when Jimmy shows up, when they get kicked out once again, when they push everybody out of the club and the guys, I mean, they're intimidating. And Marissa's like, dad. And he's like, dad. And he's like, what? And Jimmy says, what? What are you, the guy who's my age and still thinks he's 25? Like, I'm like, yay, Jimmy. Like, he's like, really?
Right.
And it was like something resonated or like, oh, I better get out of here. You're going to hit a kid? Yeah. Come on. So I thought Jimmy was a hero.
Also what was going on before, you know, when Luke shows up at the dinner party you're at the Lighthouse dinner. Mindy, you're so funny and so good. You're like, go. Like, I just really loved you in this episode. Uh-huh. And I had to just comment on how funny it is when you're like, Luke, what are you doing here? Like, and he's like, shows up in the window and you're like, ah.
That was one of those things. This episode I was noticing, just watching, I don't know if you do that, that I could see that I was starting to become more comfortable and more confident in choices that I made. And in that respect, it felt like, okay, I'm going to make some choices that were a little bit, maybe kind of overacting, but it was
it's so good.
It worked because this episode is the comedy. There's no melodrama in this one.
Right.
It's all that comedy and
it's all fun. It's a really fun one.
Super fun. Like when he says you're glowing and it's like, I'm just so excited. She just had two orgasms. Come on.
Of course she's glowing. So the kids then leave the Hollywood Club, right? And they're walking down Hollywood Boulevard. I actually remember walking down Hollywood Boulevard and shooting this.
It's an iconic scene of the four of you.
And they just all joke about their roles in the group. You know, we have the brain, the brawn, the beauty. And then Summer's like, well, what am I? And then Seth says it.
Yeah, he's like, well, what am I, Cohen? And boobs. And then you hit him, which you did in the car too. And then the bitch.
A lot of hitting.
And okay, I'll take the boobs. And he says, hey, so will I.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of ad-libbing. Maybe the bitch and thanks, so will I.
Do you think? Was that a dynamic that you guys had where you, because I noticed you hit him in the car and then you hit him here.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Josh has the balls to like write that himself.
Right. Okay.
You know, like thanks, I'll take him or something. I mean, maybe, maybe not. You know, and the bitch thing, Adam and I had a joke about the bitch thing. I think the first gift he ever got me was Why Do Men Love Bitches?
A
joke.
Oh, gosh.
It's a book. Yeah, I think that was one of my first presents I ever got from maybe a birthday or something. Why Do Men Love Bitches? So anyway, I think probably it was him.
Well, there's a lot of like, oh, you know, Haley's home and they, you know, clearly they can tell that she's been through something, but they're there to welcome her and everyone's mm-hmm. home. And Ryan and Marissa got to have a fun night together. Mm-hmm. And there we are at the end and Luke showing up and he's like, dude, it's over. I'm done having sex with Julie Cooper. And right. Marissa walks out of the bathroom and the sky just fell.
Oh, shit.
Oh, my gosh. I was like, you yeah. know what? And it reminds me, really, we didn't say this in the scene where Ryan and Seth were in the pool house when they first found out. And yeah. Seth goes, oh, no. She can't find out. Marissa can't take the bad news well. Like, Josh puts the on everything. It's not just bad news. It's like, right. she doesn't take the bad news well. And so here we go. Just when she had a respite from the angst, this is now yep. going to be kind of a doozy one, right?
And honestly, like how Ben played this as Ryan, he's like losing. He's like, oh, fuck. You know, he's just like his face right. because she hears this news and we all know what happens, you know, with Marissa.
Oh, man. I cannot believe, not to harp on this, that while I was shooting, I was like, and I think this is what happens where I don't like to think of, you can't play a character as a villain. And this is a pretty villainous thing to do, especially to her daughter. But I kept thinking like, what's the big deal? And now, mm-hmm. now it's a big deal.
No, it's a big deal. Yeah. It's a huge deal. So yeah. So basically, you know, in this, oh, and I just want to note Julie in the driveway, once Luke ends it with her, immediately calls Caleb and takes him up on the date. But Luke is like literally just a foot away. She right. did not wait very long.
Well, at least she was like, at least she wasn't double dipping, right?
That's true. All right, I'll give that to you. Right. Sure.
I was going to ask, because I can tell just at the end, now that that was that episode, it was so yeah. much fun. I do yeah. know that, you know, when it came to doing this kind of meta humor that Josh was doing, mm-hmm. He said, you know, for this show to work for him, he needed mm-hmm. Seth. He needed Seth, and right. it was okay for him to do this show so he could feel his way through it as long as there's this mm-hmm. guy commenting on it. And then all of the characters started commenting very quickly. All the characters became very self-aware. And right. it was, you know, this, no other episode ever had as much of this kind of meta show within a show, we're in on the jokes, mm-hmm. self-deprecating, mm-hmm. self-parody, all of that. And I just think it worked really well. It was so much fun.
Yeah, it was. It was fun to watch. And it was really entertaining. Let's do some quick rapid fire questions from this episode. Are you ready?
Yep.
Favorite outfit?
Marissa at the door with her ponytail and that beautiful top with the flowers over the shoulder. Did you like Julie and Summer in this episode or did you hate him?
I liked Summer and Julie in this episode. They were both funny and yes.
Yeah.
Answer is yes.
Okay.
Favorite quote?
Curling iron burn.
That was good.
Okay. Best character of the week award.
Ryan, for being so morally responsible.
Okay.
Favorite musical moment.
The favorite musical moment would have to be the, how do you say it? The, all the boys, the plus ones, the band that Seth was saying awful music about.
Perfect. Well done.
Perfect. Yeah.
Yes. But so visiting LA today was a lot of fun. I had fun talking about it. All the inside jokes. I could kill Schwartz.
Oh, really? Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. They were very funny.
Yes.
But yeah, and Colin being here, it was all great. And Paris being in the episode, I mean, very fun. Very fun today.
Yes, very fun.
Yes.
Oh, and I don't think we ever mentioned, you know, the autograph of the 20th century, 21st century. Yeah, I mean, how did Josh
Camera
know?
Phones.
Camera phones.
I mean yeah. And it was a flip phone. And now look how far we've come. I mean, it's kind of insane.
I think that is the quote of the episode, don't you think?
Yeah, and I think actually Paris in the scene with Seth takes their photo, a mm-hmm. selfie, and Paris Hilton claims she invented the selfie, and I feel like it's documented on the show here. Maybe it's the same timeline as that Britney Spears selfie she claims was the first selfie, or maybe it was on the show.
Okay.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you,
for listening today.
Yes.
It was fun.
Yes. I'm having a blast.
Yeah.
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 Good times.
Thank you guys for listening. Follow, rate, and review. Welcome to the OC Bitches, wherever you listen to your podcasts. And if you like to watch us, check it out on YouTube. And also, the podcast is now available on HBO Max. Bye.
Shopify presents cool sheets from AHA to...
I suffered from the wrong kind of hot in bed. Heat-induced insomnia. That was my AHA moment. Bed sheets that keep you cool. Then I thought, how do I even sell bed sheets? That's when I had the idea that made it all possible. Signing up on Shopify.
This is possibility powered by Shopify. Sign up for a free trial at shopify.com/podcast22. Shopify.com/podcast22.
Hi, everyone. It's Rabia Chaudhry.
And I'm Ellen Marsh.
And we have a new podcast called Rabia and Ellen Solve the Case. As you know, I am a very smart lawyer.
You are. You're so well-respected in the entire world. You know everything.
Thank you so much.
And as you know, I am a famous Broadway star. Gorgeous. I sing like a nightingale.
Well, yes. At least that's what your mom says. Just kidding. This is Ellen Marsh.
And I'm Rabia.
But we are teaming up to bring you a show like you have never heard before.
True crime meets talk show. Nobody's done it. We're going to do it. We're going to do the impossible. And it's the two things that I love. Ellen, I think you like it too.
What? True crime and talking?
Yeah.
I'm there. Every other week, we will have a guest talking about whatever true crime case they are obsessed with. We have a list, everything from the Lacey Peterson murder.
Yeah, some of the most famous cases you've ever heard of, obviously, like JonBenet Ramsey, the West Memphis Three.
Chris Watts, Khalif Browder.
Elisa Lam, Madeleine McCain.
Sandra Bland, the Springfield Three. The list goes on and on. But they are all cases that you know, and we are going to dive in deep with someone else and just talk about them.
No. We're going to solve the case, Ellen.
That's right. We're going to solve the case. So subscribe to Rabia and Ellen Solve the Case wherever you get your podcasts.